Good morning, everybody. If I may take the liberty, unfortunately, my grandfather passed away last night, so I'm going to dedicate my shir to Elazar ben Meir Yom Tov. And Elazar ben Meir Yom Tov, and if I'm a little scattered, you'll forgive me. Okay, so today I wanted to try to understand Rivka a little bit better. As the title says, she's Avram's niece, Yitzchak's wife, Yaakov's mother. She's an interesting character. The Mefarshim don't all agree on her personality, how to understand some of her actions. So I'd like to explore some of the things that she did, try to understand them. I'm going to take one path. It's not the only way to understand her, but it's definitely the one that I like. So if you'll start with me with the first source in Bereishis Perek Yud Aleph, I'd like to talk about the fact that the Torah has a lot of genealogical lists, a lot of Eila Toldos. Menachem Liebtag actually has a whole shiur on tracing the pattern of these Eila Toldot lists, and making the point of the fact that they're usually the kind of thing you would skip over, but there's a wealth of information in them. And just to point out the fact that just in the first 11 chapters of Sefer Bereishis, there are three genealogical lists. The first one is of the 10 generations from Adam to Noah in Perek He. The second is of the 70 nations that descended from Noah in Perek Yud. And ours in Perek Yud Aleph of the 10 generations from Noah to Abraham. And if you just look in Pasuk Yud, you'll see that it says, Eila Toldot Shem, Shem ben Me'at Shanava Yolid at Arpachshat Shnatayim Achar Hamabul. In general, it tells us the name of somebody, how old they were when they gave birth to their child, and it goes through a lot of the, it goes through a whole list of names and tells us that kind of information. Most of the time, the names that we see in these lists, we never hear from again. What we notice is that the last person mentioned in the list is the one that's significant. The list in Perek Yud Aleph is a little bit different because we get more details and more information than we do in the others. So if you go to the second pasuk in source number one, where I jumped ahead to pasuk Chaf Dalet, you see Vayhi Nachor Tesha V'Estrim Shana V'Yoled Et Terach. He was 29 when he had Terach. Vayhi Nachor Kvei Holido Et Terach Tesha Estrim Shana Mat Shanim V'Yoled Banim Uvanot. Vayhi Terach Shivim Shana V'Yoled Et Avram Et Nachor V'Et Haran. Then Terach gets his own Eila Toldot. And then pasuk chavchet vayamad Haran al pnei Terach aviv eretz molarito. It tells us that Haran died. Pasuk chavtet vayikach Avram v'Nachor lahem nashim. Then we get told that Avram and Nachor get married. It's not the normal thing that you find in one of these Eila Toldot genealogical lists. Shem eshet Avram Sarai, Shem eshet Nachor Milka, bat Haran avimalka v'avi Yiska. We get the names of their wives. Then we get told in Lamed that Sarai, unfortunately, is barren. Lamed Aleph, Vayikach Terach et Avram Beno, Vet Lo Ben Haran Ben Beno, Vet Sarai Kalto Eshet Avram, Vayitzu Itam Ur Kastim, Lalecha et Arza Kanan. And then we get the famous story about how Terach decides to leave Ur Kastim to go to Eretz Kanan, and they come to Haran. So this genealogical list gives us more information than we normally see, but it's basically leading into Terach's family and telling us about his children. The first mention we have of Sarai is telling us that she's the wife of Avram, and we never hear about her as an individual person, that she has a father who gives birth to her, etc., etc. We first hear about her as a wife. So when we see these genealogical lists, the one that the list ends with tends to be someone significant, and it tends to be someone that there is a story about. So for example, in Perek He, when the list ended with Noach, we all know that there's a major story about Noach. It's not surprising. So that's why it's very interesting in source number two, at the end of Bereishis Perek Chafet, which is the story of the Akedah. Right after that story, we have a list. It's not an Eletoldot list, but Avram gets told, Vayugad la'Avram, Hine yalda milka gam hi banim la'Nachor. All of a sudden, he gets told about his brother and sister-in-law having children. And then we get a list of the children. Utz b'choro, Buzachiv, Kmuel avi Aram, Ksad, Echazo, Epildash, Yidlaf, Ebetuel. And he learns all about his nephews. Pasuk Chaf Gimel is interesting to you and me. Ubetuel yalad et Rivka, Shmona eli yalda milka l'Nachor avi Avraham. And Betuel, his nephew, had a daughter, Rivka. These are the eight sons that Milka had. So that's something interesting to know. That all of a sudden there's a list of children, a family list, and the person that the list ends with is Rivka. What's significant about this, if you take it one step further, is who's Rivka's older brother? Lavan. So if you're going to mention that Betuel had kids, who might you have thought either would get mentioned first or at all? Lavan. So clearly, who's the point of this list? Rivka, out of all the eight kids, the only one they mention having children is Betuel. Granted, they say that Kmuel has Aram, but there's no Lashon of Yalad, so it's still a different category. So we see that Rivka deserves or merits having her own genealogical list where she's the point. She's the only one of the matriarchs that gets that. So before we learn anything else about Rivka in the Torah, we already are set for the fact that she's different. Sarai, who's a pretty important one of the Imahot, we only get introduced to her when she's a wife, when she's part of a partnership later on in her life. Rivka has a whole family tree just devoted to learning about her. Before we have, it's the Perek, two Prekim before, she's going to be chosen as Yitzchak's bride. Before that, we get told of her birth. So clearly the Torah is setting us up to realize that there's something unique about Rivka. And basically, Rashi says exactly what I just told you in source number 3. Ubetuel yalad et Rivka kol yechusin halalu lo nechtevu elu bishvil pasuk zeh. The whole reason why this family tree is here is just for the pasuk that tells us about Rivka. And then the Ramban in source number 4 says the same thing. Look, lo hiskir hakatuv Lavan. Lavan's not mentioned here, and he's older than Rivka, everything that we've just said. That's what the Mefarshim notice, and they say the only reason why it must be here is because they want to herald the arrival of Rivka. So now let's jump ahead to the major story, the first story that we have in the Torah about Rivka, which is the one where Avraham sends his Eved to find a wife for Yitzchak. So if everybody could look at source number 5, we have Perek Chaf Dalet, which we just read yesterday. And it says, Avram Zakein Babi Yamim, Hashem Beirachat Avram Bakol. Avram is getting older, and Hashem had blessed him with everything. Avram's getting old, and he realizes that the time, he's nearing his end, and he better make sure that Yitzchak gets settled. Vayomer Avram El Avdo Zakan Beito HaMoshel B'chol Asher Lo, Simna Yadcha Tachad Yerechi. Avram says to his Eved, the one who's in charge of his entire household, I want to make you take an oath. Va'aspiacha b'Hashem elkei shemayim ve'elkei haaretz asher lo tikach isha livni mibno knan asher anochi yoshev bekirbo. I don't want you to take a Canaanite girl for my son. Pasuk dalet ki el artzi ve'el molarati telech lakachta ishi livni liyitzchak. I want you to go to my land, my homeland. That's where I want you to go to find a wife. In Pasuk Hei, the Eved says, what if I can't get her to come back with me? Should I bring your son to there? Pasuk Vav, Vayomer lav Avram, Yishamer lecha, pen tashiv epini shama. No way, don't do that. Pasuk Zayin, Hashem elokei shemayim, asher lekachani mi beit avi, me'eretz molateti, asher diber li, v'asher nishba li lemor lezarcha atenet aretz hazot, hu yishlach macho lefanecha v'lakachti ishi livni sham. Hashem, the God of Shammai, the God of the heavens, who took me from the house of my father and the land of my birthplace and told me that he's going to give me this land, will send an angel before you and make sure that you can find a wife. If she doesn't want to come, he says in Pasuk Chet, then I absolve you of this oath. Under no circumstances should you send my son back there. And in Pasuk Tet, the Eved takes the oath. What I'd like to bring your attention to is how many times when Avraham is telling this Eved to find a wife for Yitzchak, and he wants him to go to the land that he grew up in to find a wife, how many times we see the language of Artzi in Pasuk Dalet, Moladeti, the land of my birthplace. He says it again in Zion, Beit Avim, Eretz Moladeti. He could have just as easily said Haran, Aram Naharayim. He never specifically calls it by name. He constantly uses the language that echoes what? When have we seen that language before? In Lech Lecha, right? In source number 6, we see Perek Yud-Bet, Vayomer Hashem El Avram, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, Mimoladetcha, Mibeit Avicha. Okay? I want you to leave your land, your place where you're born, the house of your father. When Hashem told him to leave, he used that language. So it's just interesting that when Avram is telling Eved, I want you to go there to find a wife, he constantly reuses this language. So all of a sudden, when we start finding a story with Rivka in it, we find echoes in a story about Rivka into a story about Avraham, and in a story where Avraham had to leave his land, his father's house, whatever, we have a story where Rivka's going to have to do the same, and the exact same language is echoed. Something interesting to keep in mind. In source number 7, the story picks up, and in Pasuk Yud, the Eved takes 10 camels and he goes to, now we see the language of Aram Naharayim El Ir Nahor. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, he has the camels sit down by the well when all of the girls who draw water from the well are coming out. And in Pasuk Yud Bet, the Eved realizes that there are going to be a ton of women coming to draw water. How in the world is he supposed to find the right one? Not going to dwell on this story because I assume most of us are very familiar with it. But he basically says the following. Vayomer Hashem El Adoni Avram, line 3, Pasuk Yud-Bet. Hakren alafanayom vasa chesed im Adoni Avram. Hashem, can you do a chesed today? Hinei anochi nitzav alein amayim uvnon ansheir yotso lishov amayim. I'm here by the water and all these girls are going to come out to draw water. Pasuk Yud-Dalet. Vahaya ne'ara asher amar aleha hatina chadech ve'eshteh. Ve'amra shteh ve'gam gemalecha ashkelta hochachta lavdecha liyitrak uvadak yasita chesed im Adoni. I'm going to do a test. I'm going to say to someone, can I have some of your water? And if she says to me, sure, you can have water, and I'll also draw water for your camels, then you have done a chesed with me, because I'll know that she's the right one. And we all know that this is definitely a great test, because after camels have traveled all the way from Canaan to Aram Naharayim, how many gallons of water do we think a camel needs to drink after a trip like that? I'll take guesses. Many. Numbers. Anyone want to take a guess? 25. How many camels did he have? Who's paying attention? 10. How many gallons does this poor little girl need to draw? 250 gallons. So the test that the Eved wants to do is not for wimps. Okay. So Pasuk Ted Vav Vayihu Terem Kilel Daber Vihine Rivka Yotzad Asher Yudal Avilt Vituel Ben Milka Eish Nachor Achi Avram V'Chadal Shachma. And very suspenseful. I find the Torah to be very suspenseful. Just dramatic. Just as he was finished speaking, lo and behold, who comes out? Rivka. And the picture is on her shoulder. Pasuk Ted Zayin, v'hanara tova mareh ma'o betulav ish lo yitzav atered ayna v'timaleh kadav v'ta'al. She's pretty, she's never slept with anybody, and she is, and she fills the picture and she gets up. Side note for a moment, it's always personally, I don't know if the right word is bothered, because I'm not allowed to be bothered by Rashi, but I always found it difficult, that's the right word. I've always found it difficult to understand how Rivka could be three. And Rashi says she is, so that's sort of the end. Except, no. Shame on all of you. It's a midrash. Not allowed to say that. It's a midrash. What you're allowed to say, as, let's say, even Ezra would say whatever, is it's a midrash. So what's wrong with me that I can't understand the midrash? You can't just dismiss the midrash. But lucky for all of you, I didn't give up. And if you'll look for a moment, side note, tangent, a source number 9. The Tosfot in Yevamos quotes for us an opinion in line 4 that they were able to prove that she was 14. Harav Shmuel Chassid Mishapiro Hochiach Shaita Bat Yudalid. And then, if you look at the last line, where the Tosfot talks about the fact that Rashi says she's 3, now Tosfot can say it, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, I hesitate to say it, but Tosfot for sure can say it. The last line says, V'tzarich lomar de midrashot chalukim ze al ze. Clearly there's a controversy between midrashim. And that's all he says, he doesn't know how to resolve it. All those of you who want to continue with Rashi and say she's 3, please do. You are in good company. All those of you who want to go with me and say she's 14, we're in good company. I just thought that, I don't know about you, but it was bothering me for a long time, and I was very happy once I found the Tosfot. Okay, let's get back to where we were. In Pasuk Yudzayin, page number 3, source number 7, the Eved runs to her and says, can I have some water from your pitcher? She says, sure, sir, please drink, and she gives him her pitcher. And when he's done drinking, she says, I'll also water your camels till they're done. Pasukhap batimaher, batarkada al hashoke, batarato del bear, lisho batishavachog malav. She rushes to bring her pitcher back and forth to the trough, and she waters his camels till they're done. And just to give you a little extra detail insight, the Eved's test was that if he asks for water, she'll say, I'll give you water and water your camels. But in actuality, what she says is, sure, sir, drink. Doesn't say anything about the camels. Gives him to drink, lets him finish. Then says to him, because she doesn't want to equate him with camels. That's how sensitive to his kavod she is. Then she says, I'll water your camels. And with no less sensitivity or respect for animals, she rushes the same way she rushed for him. And she even said to him, I'll water your camels ad im kilu lishto, until they're done. So there's no less of an interest. Don't think for a second the fact that she didn't offer right away meant that she wasn't going to water the camels. She just didn't think to say, I'll water you and your camels. She decided to separate the two. So again, if you're a very close reader of the text and you notice such differences, you'll see extra sensitivity, extra midos in Rivka. Nevertheless, Pasuk Chafal, Ha'ish Mishta'eh, the guy is dumbfounded because 250 gallons and she's running back and forth. We already said this is amazing. And basically, what he says is, I'm in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, who are you? Pasuk Chaf Dalet, she says who she is. Then she offers him to come stay with her. And in Pasuk Chaf Zayin, Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elkei Adoni Avraham Asher Lo Azav Chasdo Va'amito Me'im Adoni Anochi Baderech Nechani Hashem Beit Achi Adoni. Thank you, Hashem, for doing the chesed with me. Not only did I find a girl that was willing to do the test, but she's actually even from Avram's family. He not only wanted me to go to his land, but his father's house, and she's from his father's house. So the fact that the Eved was so focused on not only asking Hashem to do a chesed with him, but that the test that he wanted was a test of chesed, And that's what Rivka passed is something that makes perfect sense. Who is his master? Avram. What does Avram stand for? Chesed. Who does he think he should bring into the house? Somebody who represents exactly that. Who should be the perfect companion for Yitzchak? Someone who represents Chesed. And that's exactly what he finds. And we all know in source number 8 that Avram is exactly the same way. We know the famous story that when he's sitting in the tent in Perek Yud-Chet in Pasuk Bet, and he sees the three men, Vayaratz Lekratam, he runs to them, and then he offers, Pasuk Dalet, Yukach Namat Maim Brachatzu Raglechem, come, let me give you water and wash your feet. And he says, I'll give you bread, and then you can go. Pasuk Vav, Vayimaher, he runs, he does more than what he says. He offers them bread, but he gives them cake. Rivka, once again, completely parallels Avraham. Avraham has a genealogical list that heralds his birth. Rivka has a genealogical list that heralds her birth. Avraham is a man who runs to do chesed. Rivka is a woman who runs to do chesed. It's very interesting that even not just thematically does Rivka match and parallel Avram, but even linguistically, the Torah is setting up the fact, both in the language of Artzi, Molodati, Beit Avi, but even with the Chesed and the language of the Chesed, Rivka clearly parallels Avraham in every way, and if we're going to start the next generation, she is going to be, it seems, the next Avraham. And if you look in source number 11, we see yet again another example of that. Because when the Eved is sitting in the house with Betuel and Lavan, trying to convince them that they should let Rivka go with him, Lavan and Betuel say, clearly this is from Hashem, Hashem Yatzah Davar, and they say, okay, you can take Rivka. And then the Eved and Pasuk Nun Gimel gives them all of this gold and silver, etc. They go to sleep, and in the morning, Pasuk Nun Dalet, the last few words, Vayakumu Baboker, Vayomer Shalcheni Lazni, okay, I'd like to go. Vayomer Achia Vimata Shivana Raitani Yamima Sahar, they're like, you know what? Let her stay another week, let her stay another 10 days, what's the rush? And Pasuk Nun Vav, the Eved's like, please don't delay me. Hashem is like, made me successful and I want to get on my way. So they say, in Nun Zayin, Nikra l'Nara v'Nishalat Piha. So let's ask her, because they are assuming a 14-year-old girl is not going to be in such a rush to leave her house forever. And Pasuk Nun Chet, as we know the story, Vayikru'u l'Rivka v'yomru'a l'hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh. They say, do you want to go? Vatomer Elech. One word. I'll go. Hashem says to Avram, Lech lecha. Hashem says, go. He goes. They say to Rivka, are you going to go? And in one word, she goes. Again, somebody who's willing for the right reasons to just leave everything behind and go where they're supposed to go. That's Rivka. And Rav Adin Steinsaltz says that when you see Rivka in this at this moment in her life, you see total confidence in all that she does. She displays a consistency, a certainty, and a commitment to what she believes is right. This resoluteness is Rivka's most outstanding characteristic. She knows what she wants. She knows what she's supposed to do. She knows what's right. Elech. I'm a lot older than her. Numbers are not important, and I can't make a decision that quickly. 14 years old, Elech. And what happens is, Pasuk Nun Tet, they send Rivka on her way, and they give her a bracha. And it's something interesting about this bracha in Pasuk Samach. Vayivarchu et Rivka, they bless her. Vayomru la, achotenu, and they say to her sister, At hayi le'alfei rivava, Vayirash zarcha zareich et sh'ar sonav. You should be to thousands of myriads, tens of thousands, and may your descendants inherit the gate of your enemies. Now, what's so powerful about all this, in my opinion, is what Rashi notes in source number 12. At Hayil Alfei Rivava, he uses the bracha, and he noticed, At Vizareich Tegablu Ota Bracha Shene'emar LaAbraham Behar Hamoriah. They give her the same bracha that Abraham got right at the end of the Akedah. Harbe arbe et zaracha. And it says, Vayirash zaracha et sha'ar sonat. It's the exact same lashon. If we had any doubt about the parallels between Rivka and Avram, if you thought any of them were a bit of a stretch or just thematic, the fact that she gets literally with the same lashon, the exact same bracha that Abraham got right after the Akedah in the same parak where she's born, I'm sorry, but that speaks volumes. Rivka is clearly going to be the female next generation of Abraham. She's going to continue his mission in the family when she marries Yitzhak. Very powerful. So now Rivka's been chosen, and she's on her way home, and we have the well-known episode of when Rivka and Yitzchak meet for the first time, and that's in source number 14. Rivka and her na'arot get on their camels in Pasuk Samach Aleph, and they follow the Ish, the Eved, and they go, Pasuk Samach Bet, Yitzchak ba mibo be'er lochai ro'i v'yoshev eretz ha'negev. Yitzchak is on his way back from be'er lochai ro'i. Pasuk samach gimel v'yetze Yitzchak rasuach pasadel ifno erev. Yitzchak is going out into the field as night falls. V'yisa ena v'yar v'hineg malim ba'im. And he lifts his eyes and he sees camels arriving. Pasuk samach dalet, vatisa Rivka et einea, vatere Yitzchak vatipol ma'al ha'gamal. She lifts her eyes, she sees Yitzchak, and she falls from the camel. Or as Ramban and Sforno like to say, she just averted her face when she saw him. Pasuk samach hei, vatomer el ha'eved mi ha'ishal hazeh ha'olech basadeh likratenu. She says, who's this man that's approaching us as we're arriving? Vayomer ha'eved hu adoni. She says, he's our master, he's the one you're going to marry. Vatikach hatzaif vatitkas. So she takes her scarf and covers her face. Pasuk samach vav, vayisaper ha'eved liyitzchak kol dvarim asher asah. And then the Eved catches up Yitzchak on everything that happened. So now let's spend a moment and talk about Rivka's actions when she meets Yitzchak for the first time. This is the first moment where the commentators don't necessarily agree or understand Rivka's actions, because until now, and as I read from Rav Steinzel, she's supposed to be this resolute, sure person, and yet when she sees Yitzchak, she either falls from her camel or averts her face. She covers herself with a scarf. What's going on here? So how are we supposed to understand her actions? If you'll look with me in source number 15, the Netziv, the author of the Hamikdavar, has one way of understanding Rivka's actions here. He says, Mirov pachad ubusha. She covered herself out of fear and embarrassment. She understood she was not worthy to be his wife. Umeaz vahala nikba biliba pachad mimenu. And from that moment further, there was going to be fear in her heart. V'lo haita im Yitzchak kemo Sara im Avraham v'Rachel im Yaakov. And therefore her marriage and relationship with Yitzchak would not be like Sarah was with Avraham or Rachel was with Yaakov. That's the way the Netziv understands what happened between Rivka and Yitzchak at this moment. And he, the Netziv, sets the tone for what's going to happen in three prakim with the blessings. When Rivka deceives Yitzchak, one of the questions that everybody always asks is trying to understand why she doesn't just directly confront him and talk to him about it. Why doesn't she communicate with him? Well, this nitziv sort of sets the tone for that perek and says she couldn't. She couldn't communicate with him. She didn't feel worthy to communicate with him. And their marriage wasn't one of equals. She saw him in the field, she saw a glow, and she never felt worthy of him. And whatever consistency, resoluteness she had until this point was immediately subdued upon seeing him. And my question on the Nitziv is, if you turn back the page for a minute, on the next pasuk in the story, though. Because in pasuk Samech Zayin, we have the pasuk that says, Vayivieha Yitzchak ha'ohela Sara imo. Yitzchak brings her into the tent of his mother Sarah. Vayikach haRivka, he marries her. Vatihilo le'isha. And she becomes a wife to him. Vayeahaveha, he loves her. Vayinachem Yitzchak achrei imo. And Yitzchak becomes comforted after the death of his mother. So what my question is, that the Nitziv is claiming that their relationship wasn't one of communication or one of equals, but then I want to understand, what about this pasuk that says that he loved her and that he felt comforted? So what the Nitziv says, if you'll go back to source number 16, because of course he's not going to ignore this, he's going to address it, is Vayehaveha Dimizeh Dichti Vatihilo Li'isha. Ein hochacha she'ahava. It's not really a proof that he loved her. Sharei haya muchrach lisena. He was forced to marry her. Ki lo binakel yimsa bitula mimishpachto dafka. And he was basically obligated to marry her, forced to marry her, because it wasn't going to be so easy to find a virgin from his specific family. And Masha who tzrach hakatuv lefareshin imtzami mena korat ruach me'ahava ad shebah yitnachem etzpano alimo. And what it means when it says that he loved her was that the love for her was what, it was a love that basically caused comfort, but it wasn't love the way that you and I understand love. And that's the way the Nitziv understands what happens in this pasuk. Okay, again, the Nitziv, much higher level than me, and nevertheless, what caused me to have difficulty with that is that Yitzchak and Rivka, to the best of my knowledge, are the only couple where the Lashon of Vayehaveha is used. That to me is very powerful. I have no doubt that Avram and Sarah had a great marriage and were partners. I don't know what I could say about Yaakov and Rachel. I guess I could do another share on that one. But nevertheless, it's... What? It does say Yaakov up there? Ba'ava so'ota. Okay, fine. Let me finish and then you'll ask me all the questions. So I guess it says it about Yaakov too. I guess so, when he was working for her. Okay. Nevertheless, it really bothered me that it says that he loved her. I don't know. I guess with the Nitziv, it could have said Vayinachem Achar Achrei Imo without the Vayaveha. I don't know. Therefore, I was happy to find Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, who didn't necessarily believe that they had a marriage with a lack of communication. And basically, he doesn't necessarily address whether they necessarily loved each other per se, but when we get to Perek Chof Zayin, I want to bring to you what Rav Hirsch says. Before we get there, though, I do want to bring to you one or two other points that might fit with my alternate way of understanding that doesn't necessarily go with the Nitziv. So if you look in source number 17, when Rivka's pregnant, we see that Pasuk Chaf, Vayihi Yitzchak ben arba'im shana bekach toat Rivka ba petuel ha'armi lipadan aram achol aban armi lo isho. Yitzchak was 40 when he married Rivka. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayetar Yitzchak la'Hashem lo chachishto ki akarahi vayater lo Hashem v'tar Rivka ishto. Yitzchak davened to Hashem l'nochach ishto. The question is, what's nochach? Because she was barren, and Hashem heard him, and Rivka got pregnant. And the question is, the Mefarshim don't all agree on what nochach means. And Rashi, quoting the Midrash in source number 18, Rashi, in source number 19, understands l'nochach as ze omed bezavayat zo umitzpalel, beze omedet bezavayat zo umitzpalelet. They were standing across from each other and davening for each other. He was davening for her, she was davening for him. Not all the Mefarshim understand it that way. And it's based on the Midrash in source number 18, the first line in on page 7, Ribono Shalom, Kol Banim Sha'atan Otein Li, Yu Mina Tzadikid Hazu, Af Hi Amra Kol Kein Banim Sha'at Atid Li Tein Li, Yu Mina Tzadik Hazeh. That all the children that I should get from this tzadikes, I hope that all the children I get would be from this tzadikes. And she says, I hope that all the kids I get will be from this tzadik. And I think that this midrash that Rashi's quoting seems to be projecting a sense of harmony between them. It seems to be projecting a sense of equality between them. I think that there is a way, if you go according to Rashi's understanding of l'nochach, that maybe, in fact, you could take vayehaveha at face value. You could say that there was harmony between them. And that maybe the way to understand the fact that she covered her face when she saw him was just as, I think it's Ramban who says, she averted her face when she saw him. It was a sense of modesty when she realized who he was, and it was not anything necessarily more complicated than that. And if you go back to source number 17, you'll see that if you want to understand the story that way, and we keep with this idea that v'yaveh is face value, and that Rivka hasn't been subdued or feel sublimated in any way, you can see that in Pasuk Chavbet, when the boys are in her stomach and there's a lot of discomfort, she says, why is this happening to me? I'm not touching that right now. She goes to talk to Hashem. So a lot of the Mefarshim say, does she go to the Navis? Does she go to Shem Ve'ever? Does she go Davin? My point simply is, Vatelech again, she goes. A lot of the Mefarshim note the fact that she doesn't go talk to her tzaddik husband Yitzchak, who Hashem has spoken to. This woman, who's very used to doing things on her own, willing to step away from her parents' house, she goes to the Navis. She davens for herself. She goes to take care of it. She's her own woman. And she wants to go find out about it. I think that Rivka is still very much the person that she is. And she gets the nevuah that she gets. And Hashem says in Chaf Gimel, Shnei goyim bevitnech, shnei lu umimi me'ach yiparedu, l'om mel'om yematz v'rav yavod se'ir. There are two nations in your stomach. Two nations are going to come from your womb. They're going to struggle, and the oldest will serve the younger. And then that brings us to the story in Perek Chav Zayin, where Yitzchak thinks he's about to die. He's old and he can't see. And the fact that he can't see makes him think that his death is imminent, but he actually lives on for at least 20 more years. And therefore he realizes that it's time for him to give his brachot to his sons. And he calls Esav. And Rivka, as we know in the story, realizes that Yaakov should get it. And she goes about doing what she does in order for Yaakov to trick Yitzchak. Yaakov does not want to do it. He argues with his mother and begs her to not make him go do it. But eventually she says, it's all on me. Alai kilat chavani, the curse is on me, just go ahead and do it. So he does. But nevertheless, she goes and gets Yaakov to trick his dad. And the question that everybody asks is, why does Rivka handle the situation that way? So on the one hand, based on the personality that we've developed this morning about who Rivka is, we can understand that when she sees a situation, she goes and she takes care of it. She does what she thinks is best. If you take the Netziv piece, you could say she doesn't know how to approach him. If you want to go with my point of view that they do love each other, that they do have a relationship of communication, then the question stands, why didn't she go and talk to him about it? And it really is a very difficult perek, a very difficult story. I teach it every year, and every time I think I have a little bit of clarity, I look at the same mefarshim, I try to find new mefarshim, my students and I all of a sudden come up with a new question, I think I've got it, and then there's something niggling. It's a very difficult story to handle. And it sounds like, if you look at the Ramban in source number 20, in line number 3, the Ramban, when he's trying to grapple with the story, says, "Ne'ah shelo higida lo Rivka me'olam hanivua asher mar shem la v'rav yavod zayir." Ramban says, "I don't know. I guess it seems that Rivka never told Yitzchak the nevuah." Ki eichaya Yitzchak over pi Hashem v'hilo tisla. Because how would Yitzchak violate what Hashem told him to do? Maybe it's out of, you know, tznius. She went to go ask Hashem and she didn't want to tell him she did it. I don't know, that doesn't necessarily fit so much. Shalcha b'lo reshus, because she went without permission. I don't know, maybe even in the relationship that she's a go-getter, she could have told him. O she'amra, ein anochi tzricha lahagid nevua lenavi, I don't have to tell a nevuah to another. I'm sure he knows it already. So the Ramban's way of understanding it is that she reached a point where she felt it was too late. He'd already called Esav to give it to him, and she was astounded that he didn't know that Esav wasn't the one to get it. So that doesn't necessarily fit with the picture that we have so much. It fits a little bit better with the Netzivs. And that's why I found it so interesting what Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch understood about the story. And what Rav Hirsch says is the following. Rivka had probably constantly argued with him, trying to convince him of the truth, and had then persuaded him, anyway, leave it for a time, you're not so old yet, there's still plenty of time, etc., and had hoped, in the meantime, that he would be undeceived. He'd find out the truth and realize that Esav shouldn't get it. But she had not succeeded, and now, what was she to do? As far as Rav Hirsch is concerned, they had a relationship where they talked all the time. And in fact, when she saw how Yitzchak felt about Esav and the fact that he was going to give the bracha, Rivka very much argued with him about it and very much told him that Esav isn't the one who should be getting the bracha, and they discussed it openly, but she couldn't convince Yitzchak away from his opinion. And so, how many times do we have this when we're arguing with someone a lot? You agree to disagree, let's take a step back, let's take a breather, we'll get back to this later. And then all of a sudden she found herself that later had already happened and it was too late. He'd already called Esav, and therefore she was a doer, she was a getter. She had grown up, I guess, with deceivers, so she had some tricks up her sleeve, and then she went about doing something that wasn't necessarily the best way to handle it. So if we go back for a moment, let's start at the beginning. We have Rivka chosen as Yitzchak's wife, as a successor to Abraham, parallel to him in so many ways, to fulfill the next generation's role of chesed. Then we have her married to Yitzchak, and it would seem that they had a relationship, according to the way I'd like to understand it, of communication, of love, and of being equals. Throughout, we see a woman who's very resolute. She can say Eilech. She can go Lidroshet Hashem herself. And when she's confronted with a situation that seems like something's going to happen, that either it's because she has to make the nevuah come true, or she thinks her husband is about to make an irreparable mistake, so she takes matters into her own hands. Unfortunately, most of the commentators seem to suggest that it was the wrong way to go, and the Torah, in its ever subtle way, criticized or commented on her wrong manner of doing things by basically never mentioning Rivka again in the Torah. She unfortunately sends Yaakov away when Esav wants to kill him and never merits seeing him again. Yitzchak does, but Rivka does not. Her death is not recorded. It's almost as if Rivka disappears. Rivka, the resolute, the one whose birth was heralded, announced, anticipated, disappears. And it would seem that the Torah is sort of saying what you did was wrong and we're going to not mention you again. So I just want to explore that a little bit more, because the first time that I read that, I had a few questions about that. So first of all, Leah's death isn't mentioned so much. So if you're going to say and make a fuss over the fact that Rivka's death isn't mentioned, then you have to explain Leah's death not being mentioned. So first of all, the way I try to deal with that is the two following ways. One, Leah's death is hinted at when Yaakov and Perek Memtet is dying. After he gives the brachot to his sons, he says to them, I want to be buried in Ma'arat HaMachpelah, where Avram and Sarah are buried, where Rivka and Yitzchak are buried, and where I buried Leah. But again, he says that Rivka's buried there, so that sort of cancels each other out. Okay, but Leah's there. So then, I was talking it over with my colleagues and discussing with them that everyone tries to make a big deal out of it, so is it a big deal or is it not? Can you say that this is saying anything? So what we were wondering is that there's a pasuk in Perek Lamed Hey that when Yaakov is traveling back to Eretz Canaan, it says that Devorah, the nursemaid of Rivka, dies, that Yaakov makes a big fuss, he cries, and he names the place where he cried, Alon Bachu. And the Mefarshim are like, where did this woman come from? Why are we interrupting the story to talk about her? And the Ramban, who's generally a Pashtan, basically says, Hakarov, the closest answer that I can come up with must be the Midrash, that this is a hint to Rivka's death, that he found out about it, because otherwise, why would he be making such a fuss over a nursemaid? So what I wondered about that is the fact that the Torah is going out of its way to tell us about her nursemaid, which is unusual, but not her. Is that the way the Torah is telling us that they're not telling us about her? Meaning, it's not just that her death isn't mentioned, because again, I was always bothered by the Leah thing. They're both sort of alluded to, but not more. But is the fact that the Torah is going out of its way to tell us about Devorah, which is sort of a hint to Rivka, it's also a hint that it's not writing about Rivka. It's almost like it wants you to catch the fact that Rivka is not being mentioned. I don't know. Chazal have a different answer. They say that Rivka's death isn't alluded to isn't written out because when she was buried, it was done in secret because Yaakov wasn't home. Yitzchak was old. Esav hated her. So there was no one to bury her. So it was done in a less than covetic way. And because it was done in a less than covetic way, they didn't want to write about it because that was embarrassing to her. So again, Chazal of course noticed it. They of course had an answer for it. But there are also a lot of Mefarshim that think the fact that she didn't merit to see Yaakov and the fact that she's not mentioned means something. And for a woman who's so powerful, so resolute, so strong, whose birth is heralded, the only one of the Imahos like that, to then sort of disappear and like never be heard from again, so to speak, seems to possibly speak volumes. I don't know. So to wrap up, I find that Rivka's one of the Imahos. A parallel to Avraham is a very powerful thing. Being so strong in personality, I think her relationship with Yitzchak is something interesting to explore. And I leave you with the question to discuss further amongst yourselves and with your families in this week's Parsha coming up, because that's where this perek is about the blessings. What do your families think happened? Why was Rivka motivated to do what she did? And is the Torah making a statement or not? And we can all come back next year and share our thoughts about this. And now there were some comments from here, and then you have a question. Yeah. So the woman over here pointed out the fact that when they are in Grar, there's an incident where Avimelech looks in the window and sees Yitzchak and Rivka mitzachek. He sees them being intimate. I also thought about that episode and wondered, because you don't see any other of the Avos and Imahos being intimate that way. The only reason why I hesitated to bring it up is because the word mitzachek, the shoresh of tzchok, has so many different uses. The way it's used by Yishmael with Yitzchak, the way it's used by Cheta Egel, I feel like, on the one hand, you can use it different ways in different contexts, but when I've mentioned it before in discussions, people have pointed out that you could understand that a lot of different ways, so I wasn't sure that it could be definitive, but you're right.
That's how
So Susan points out that maybe it is definitively that they were being intimate, because if that's how Avimelech realized that they were being husband and wife, then it doesn't mean that they were doing avodah zarah. So maybe that's that if the Torah wants to put in an example of them being intimate, what's it saying? Why would it be doing that? Maybe to say that their relationship really was a very strong one. That is one of the examples that I think that makes it difficult for me to be shalim with the Nitziv. I don't think it's just because I want them to be happy. I think that those two, Vayaveha, and that fact that they're mitzachek and grar, makes it difficult for me.